O'Clock.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich und der Anne in Linz bebt ein erstes Mal. Linz schlägt zu! Das ist unglaublich, was die Black Wings hier zelebrieren!
Flying High, ein Unibet Hockey O'Clock Spezial.
The day is finally here. Obviously, the day that the current Black Wings season has concluded, but now it's time to get a little bit nostalgic. It's the debut of a 10-part series here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. It's called Flying High, and it's solely dedicated to the championship run, the incredible championship run that the Black Wings enjoyed 10 years ago. From this point onward, every Sunday, a new episode comes out with one of the protagonists of said championship team. And it makes me very proud that the very first protagonist that talks about Flying High is the architect of the championship team in Linz. It's none other than Rob Dahlman. Coach, I'm so thankful that you're taking the time to talk about that incredible journey that team went on 10 years ago.
Well, I love talking about that every opportunity that I get. So it's definitely my pleasure. There's no doubt about that.
Coach, I thought long and hard about a title for this series. It ended up being Flying High, obviously, with everything that went on. If you had to come up with a title for that championship season, what would that be?
That's a really good question. I think I'm going to just say unforgettable. That would be my title.
I thought long and hard about the magic carpet ride as well, but then again, it doesn't necessarily translate all too well to German. But in what regard would you say was this one of the ultimate magic carpet rides?
It really was, and I've been involved with teams that have had successful seasons, but this one, right from day one, it really was a magic carpet ride. It was unexpected, and nobody thought that we would achieve what we ultimately achieved. There were a lot of, obviously there was the coaching change. There were a lot of players that had changed. Players that had been in Linz for a number of years didn't return to that team. So there were so many unknowns within the makeup of the season that to have what happened was totally, totally unpredictable. And I think that's what made it so memorable, other than the obvious fact that we won the championship. It's just that nobody, not in their wildest dreams, would anybody have thought that, first of all, that we would win and accomplish what we did, but also have the type of season that we had that year. Right from the beginning, it was very, very surreal, and I've never experienced anything like it, hadn't experienced anything like it before, and haven't had the privilege of coming across it again in my career. I'm hoping maybe I'll have a chance to do it one more time, but it'd be very, very difficult to have a season like we had that year in Linz.
I want to back things up a little bit. I want to take you back to the spring of 2011 or the summer of 2011 when word got out that there would be a new head coach incoming in Linz. And to a lot of people, it wasn't Rob Daum back then. It was Rob Who. So
yeah.
How did things develop that you got in touch with Linz, or Linz got in touch with you?
Well, that's an interesting story, because Manny Viveros was in St. Albert, which was just very close to where I lived. And I had a call from a team in the second league in Austria, and about coming to coach for them during their season, as it was. And so I decided that wasn't the right fit at that time, but it just so happened that the person that was contacting me about the potential job was also a good friend of Christian Pritthaler's. And so when I didn't accept the position, it was actually in Dornbirn at that time. And when I didn't accept the position, my name sort of got moved to Christian. And Christian, in February of the season before I started in Linz, gave me a call and said they thought they might be making a coaching change at the conclusion of the year, and he wanted to know if I was interested. And I, to be honest, I didn't have a clue about European hockey, about the Austrian league, about Linz. I didn't have any idea at all. And I just said, listen, I'm interested, but I don't know very much. And I'd really appreciate the opportunity to come down, come and see you and see the city and meet. And that ended up happening. Went and spent a few days in Linz. Got a chance to watch a couple of playoff games. One game in Linz, and ironically, one game in Villach. And during that time, we sat down and discussed the possibility of maybe coaching the team the following year. Christian did some work, did some background work, talked to some people that had played for me during that just prior to that time, and he got positive feedback, and my feedback with the time I spent in Linz was very positive, and one thing led to another, and I signed a contract shortly after the conclusion of their season.
Up to that point, you had never coached outside of North America. How much of an adventure was it for you to finally take that step?
It's a huge adventure. It's a totally different world. It's not something you're used to. It's a complete change of everything. So it was a big change and something that I hadn't anticipated doing. I thought that I would remain in North America. I thought there might be some opportunities to present themselves there. It didn't happen. And then Linz was very quick to offer me the position before other opportunities presented themselves. So I took a leap of faith, to be honest, and it couldn't have worked out better. I got so lucky to my first trip to Europe with no real knowledge of what I was getting into, and so totally at the mercy of the people in Linz. Like I say, I can't say enough about how fortunate I was that my first tour of duty was in Linz, because it was just an incredible place, and the 6 years that I spent there was remarkable, and it became a second home to me. So I was really, really lucky that things turned out the way that they did, because there's so many places where if you go there, you have no chance to succeed, or it's not a great place to be, or the organization is in a mess, but none of those things were in Linz. And like I say, I was really, really fortunate to land where I did.
Now, the Black Wings of spring 2011 were coached by Kim Collins, and they were ousted by Villach in the semifinals, in the quarterfinals, of course. And obviously you already been in attendance for a couple of games. How did you watch the games? How many mental notes did you try to make during those games?
None. All I wanted to see was what was the hockey like, what was the environment like, and from a hockey perspective, that's all I wanted to see. I wanted to see the quality of play and those things, just to get a feel for if it worked out, what I was getting into, and that was really, really the only thing that I looked at. And then the other side of it was the city of Linz and seeing if that would be a good place to live. And really those were the only things that I was concerned about at that time. I wanted to make sure that the quality of play was something that I could feel would be a challenging one and a rewarding one. And I found that immediately. And then obviously the city, I was just captivated by the city itself.
But then again, at what point, and that's probably maybe after you put your signature on a contract, maybe even before, but at what point did you try to really wrap your head around as regards team building, roster building, free agents, and everything that goes into building a team?
Well, there was a little bit of when I left Linz, I thought that the contract would be coming fairly shortly after that. It didn't. So I was a little bit nervous that maybe there had been a, a change of heart or that the offer was not going to be there for me. But once the contract came and I signed the contract, that's when really sat down and started to work closely with Christian about what we talked a little bit about it when I was in Linz during the time I spent there in February. We talked a little bit about the team and the direction, and he talked about the older players that were there and whether we should keep these older players. And so we had some discussions about it, but it really didn't take hold until after the contract was signed, and then we could really start to plan in earnest for the upcoming season.
Now, taking over a team, a new challenge on a new continent, a lot of things that go into it. But what fans always kind of keep asking is, what are the first kind of steps when taking on a new job? What were your first steps?
Well, the first thing was that when it came to building the team, I guess would have been the first thing. What kind of players that we wanted to have, and you always, as a coach, you always have your philosophy. And I wanted to find players that would fit into my philosophy. I wanted to find players that I had a feel for, as far as not only their abilities but some familiarity with their personalities, and that side of it. So it was those were the things that we started to think about and work on. Those are sort of the first steps.
Because I already or also wanted to know what it felt like from a player's perspective that a new coach would be coming in. And I asked one of the leaders on that Black Wings team how he remembered the first meetings, the first couple of days, weeks under your tutelage. No one else than Pat Leahy, who sent me this. I want to listen to you or listen to it with you and then talk about it.
We'd cycled through a couple of coaches in Linz in my first couple years. It happens, that's the business side of sports. When you don't win, things change. And then in that off season, before that 11-12 year, I got a text from Phil Lucas that we had a new coach. He said Rob Dom. I didn't know anything about him personally, but I was curious to see who the new head of the helm was. And it wasn't too much longer after that my phone rang in the summer. Never had a coach call me in the summer before. Didn't know which way that conversation was going to go, to be honest. But he introduced himself, talked a little bit about his philosophy as a coach and his expectations of the team. And then I remember he said to me, we need you to be a big part of this team and a leader if we're going to be successful. And that conversation, it stuck with me. And I remember when I hung up the phone thinking to myself, I want to play for this guy. When you have a guy at the top, a leader of men, it permeates through the whole team, and it creates a successful atmosphere. And that's exactly what he did. He asked a lot of us as players. He challenged us to be the best versions of ourselves individually. And that inherently created a stronger team bond in and of itself. That championship season, was a blast start to finish. And it started at the top with Coach Dom changing the culture in Linz.
A packed statement from a great Linz player, from Pat Leahy. I want to digest it, not piece by piece, but the most important parts. And obviously, he mentioned that no coach ever before had called him in the offseason. So there's a first. But when you outlined your philosophy to Pat Leahy, what was the framework like? What did you say to him? And how vividly do you remember this conversation? Because he apparently does.
It's unbelievable, Martin. I remember that conversation like it was yesterday. And I don't know why that conversation stuck out more than the other ones, but it did. And I remember talking to Pat. I remember telling him about, you know, we needed him to be a leader. And I also remember telling him that I had heard he hadn't had a very good year the previous year, and that it was important that we needed more from him than what he had provided. And so I do remember that conversation. And that's amazing, because I very rarely do remember things like that. But that's one that I do remember. And it's actually quite amazing that Pat would mention it as well. So I did try and talk to all the players as soon as I got the job, the majority of them, that summer, just to do exactly what I did with Pat. And I just wanted to let them know that the way that the expectations that I had on the individuals, or the expectations I had for the team, the way I felt that we needed to do things to be successful. And I wanted to put a seed in everyone's mind as to what I was looking for, rather than spring it on them at the beginning of training camp. I wanted to do it early so they could think about it through the course of the summer. Felt that I was hoping that it might motivate them a little bit more to work a little harder in preparation, knowing that the expectations were going to be high. Because if you don't do the work in the summer, you're not going to be able to get things done when the season rolls around. But I also just wanted to get to know them a little bit on a personal level and give them some idea what I was all about as a person and what they could expect from me when it came time to get together in the fall.
Now, another thing that he touched on is that he was kind of surprised that you called. And I mean, trying to get in contact with one of the ultimate leaders on the team, if you kind of rub him the wrong way, the whole season might get dicey as regards that relationship.
That's fair.
How nervous, or was there any kind of nervousness when you called him, or was it nice, easy, and relaxed because of summertime?
Well, you bring up a really good point. That's a, you know, that's a very, very astute observation, because if you do alienate someone in even a conversation in the summer, it's not the right foot that you want to step out on. And the whole purpose of the phone call was to do the opposite of that, was to set some groundwork and to make sure guys were looking forward to working with me and looking forward to the season. So I wasn't nervous about it because I'd spent a lot of time in my career previously. I did a lot of recruiting for my previous job. So I had a pretty good understanding of how to communicate with players in that type of environment. And I just wanted to be open and honest and to be positive about what the players could look forward to and what they could expect and what I would try and give to them and what I needed from them in return. So I wasn't uneasy about the conversation, but you're right. If the conversation doesn't go as well as you might hope, or then you have you're setting the wrong direction, and that's the complete opposite of what I wanted to do. But fortunately, it was taken in a positive vein. And as I said a little bit earlier, I was a little bit more demanding on Pat than maybe some of the other people I talked to, because in talking to people in Linz, they had explained to me that they didn't think that he had had the type of year that they expected of him. And at one point, Christian even thought that maybe he was a player that we didn't want back. But as it turned out, we kept Pat, and he delivered in spades during that season. He provided all the things that we had hoped he would do. He had a great year. He played on our top line. He did all the little things that you'd have to do to be successful. He wasn't a flashy player, but he was really, really solid in all aspects of the game. And he always gave that little bit extra that you needed to win games. And it ended up working really well.
Now, you outlined your philosophy to him and probably to all the other players who were on the team. You took on a team that was 2 years removed from a finals appearance, that had a good core of Austrian players, some good imports that you brought along. But then again, I'm sure you already had ideas what was missing on the team. When you put together a blueprint, or when you try to put together what was missing, what kind of players we're looking to bring in?
Well, I think with any team, not just Linz, you have in your mind what you believe will be a successful team, what kind of qualities you need from certain players. And for me, I'm an offensive coach, so I like to have skilled players that play with a lot of heart and a lot of determination. For me, if you don't have a high compete level, my interest for you drops dramatically, no matter how skilled you might be. If you don't have that desire to win and that desire to compete, then it's hard for me to have those type of players. So that's what I always try and look for. So I had sort of a blueprint in my own mind as to the type of team I wanted. And then it was just a matter of finding the players to fit into those slots. And it's not so as simple as just getting the best players. It's getting the best players for the roles that you need them to play. And that's always been sort of my template. And I had the same philosophy going into Linz. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I had a lot of experience with recruiting, and I also had a lot of experience from my university days in building teams. And so I used that same philosophy of building my teams at the university level, and then just taking that over to Linz. I kept that same template and that same thought process in trying to find players to fit into the roles that we needed on the team.
And then again, what a lot of fans are, of course, looking at are just the numbers of new imports to come to a team that they've put up in previous spots. But for players in the locker room, free agent signings, new additions to the team can also be interpreted as kind of culture and tone setters. Would you say that you had them among the signings that you brought along to Linz?
Well, some of them, yes. No question about that. But there were some there already. The players that we kept, we kept some guys that were very solid core players, very good culture players. Pat Leahy was one. Phil Lucas was another. Mickey Meyer was another. Bobby Lucas. And I mean, so it wasn't, there was a core there of good people and a core that was looking to build a good culture. So it was just a matter of adding the skill set to go along with what we needed to build a good solid team throughout, and then also trying to bring in character people as well that would make a solid team. And if you have that, then your culture has a better chance to be a positive one as well. And I know that when, first of all, we had to make some really tough decisions with some players that had been in Linz that had been really good players, and we made the decision to move away from those players, which left it would have been easy, I guess, to keep some of the veteran players there that had had success there and that were very popular there and were probably still good enough to contribute. But my feeling was is that I thought we had to make some drastic changes. And fortunately, Christian was willing to do that. And he didn't put me in a position where there were players that, I'm not going to say were negative, but were maybe at the end of their careers. And he could have said, well, you got to keep these guys around, but he didn't do that. He allowed the team to be changed dramatically. And, I think that was obviously very, very important as well. And I'm not saying that those players would have been necessarily negative for the culture, but when you're going to change a culture, you have to make dramatic changes. And that's what we did as far as the personnel is concerned.
And then again, almost all the players that you brought in that year for that season had an immediate impact. We're talking about the Curtis Murphys of this world, the Adrian Wiedemanns, the Danny Ehrmanns, the Justin Kellers, the Mike Ouellettes. At what point did you think, wow, this crop of signees, there's not really a bad apple among them?
Well, I knew some of those players personally. And I know that Christian thought, I know that when we I wanted to sign Danny Ehrmann, he thought I was nuts because Danny had played in Italy and had an average year in Italy, which for most people would say, well, if you have an average year in Italy, you're not going to be successful in Austria. But I knew Danny. I coached him in Houston. I knew the type of player he was. I knew the type of person he was. So I was really gung-ho in getting him to come to Linz. Unfortunately, we were able to sign him. Rob Heise is another player that Christian, you know, he had been in Graz previously, and he had been a little bit immature in Graz, I think. And, you know, he was kind of people frowned upon him a little bit because of his what he had done in Graz. And I had coached him in Springfield, so I knew him, and I felt that he'd matured a little bit and that he would be a good player for what we were looking for as a second line center. And Ouellette was a different situation because he was a top scorer in the league already. And because of that, we were comfortable he would be a leading scorer for us moving forward. I didn't know Mike personally at all, but I knew in talking to Christian, he described the type of player he was and he fit into what we were looking for. So, you know, just all of these things, when you talk about Curtis Murphy, that was the key, I think, to our season to a large extent because of the person Curtis is, but also the type of player he was. He was a right-handed power play defenseman who I think he was the best player in the league that year. And if we wouldn't have had Curtis Murphy, all the things we're going to talk about previously or we're going to talk about in the next little while wouldn't have happened because he was, you know, he was the key guy. I knew him a little bit I coached him in Houston as well, but Christian had talked to him about the possibility of coming to Austria after his time in Switzerland. And because I knew him, I encouraged Christian to make that move. And you know, all of those, everything just seemed to, as you suggest, you know, fall into place because I think we did a real good job of filling the holes that we needed to fill with the sort of the what I was looking for those roles. And, you know, obviously it worked out really well.
Now, of all those people that we just mentioned, with many of them, you shared previous experiences. Did you have to persuade someone longer than the other, or did they all immediately jump aboard?
Well, no, they were pretty eager. You know, they were looking forward to the opportunity. And one of the things that I did is, you know, I had spent time in the American Hockey League and I tried to find players that had played at that level. And sometimes that's not so easy to do, to get that type of player, that quality of player, to your team. And you know, we were fortunate. Wiedemann had that experience. Murphy had that experience. Thurman had that experience. Heise had that experience. So they had played at a high level in North America. So they were good players and you know, they were looking for an opportunity and I think the personal connection, you know, definitely helped in persuading them to come to Linz. I don't think there's any question about that. So we were fortunate that we got high caliber players that had good experience as imports in North America and played at a high level.
Now, one last time that I want to take you back to what Pat Leahy sent us and what we just listened to a couple of minutes ago. He said, you ask a lot of the team. And that's something that one hears, well, more often than not when talking about you and you implementing your system and your philosophy and everything that goes with it. How intense was training camp? Was there ever a point where you thought, okay, this is a lot for some of the players, maybe for all the players?
Well, I knew it was a lot. Right from the beginning, I knew it was going to be a lot for everybody. And I know at some point during the season, I don't know when it was, Kristen Pertoller said that he had watched practice in training camp and he thought I was nuts because all the things we were doing, he didn't think that we would be able to handle that much information. He didn't say that to me at the time, but he said it to me a little bit later through the course of the year. And it was a lot of information. And, you know, I challenged the players to absorb the information. And then we put the things in place. And then we spent the rest of the year teaching it and fine tuning it and building the team within that structure. And as the season progressed, within a month, players felt a lot more comfortable, and you could see that everything was falling into place as far as their understanding level was concerned. But at the beginning, I'm sure everybody was confused by a lot of the things that were happening. And I explained to them that, you know, this is not going to be easy. Again, I talk about my expectations being high. But I also said that, you know, you'll get it. It's just going to take a little bit of time. Be patient, keep working. And at some point, this is all going to be worthwhile and you'll understand what's happening. And then as time went on, you could see, I'm going to say after the first month of training camp and what have you, that guys were starting to feel more comfortable. They were understanding what was going on. And it gave the team, I think, and the players a lot of confidence. And the other thing that really helped along the way is we played some really top players in preseason, or top teams in preseason. I think we played all DEL teams, if I'm not mistaken, and had really good success against them. So the players could see by what was happening was reinforced by the fact that we had success against very good teams. And so it built confidence in what we were doing. And I think that was probably the most important thing, is that guys could see that what we were doing was working. And when that happens, then they're eager to continue on.
That would have been my next question. Did you ever think about what would have happened if those early returns wouldn't have been there?
Well, it would have just taken longer. It wouldn't have changed my approach or my strategy, because I was really committed to what I felt would be successful and what I wanted to do. But it would have, you know, who knows what would have happened. There could have been chaos, but you know, fortunately that didn't happen. And then, we just went from there. We just gained confidence almost, you could see it on a daily basis, that we were gelling together as a team and we were confident in what was happening. And when you have those things going for you, it's pretty hard to stop. And we got some momentum and we just kept going with it. But you're right. Had things not gone as they did in the preseason, then things could have been completely different. I could be working in the Chrysler plant.
We've tackled the offseason. We've tackled how you got to Linz. We tackled training camp. Now it's time to move onto the season, onto the magic carpet ride here on Flying High after this break. Flying High wird euch in den nächsten 10 Episoden mit den besten Geschichten rund um die Black Wings 2011-2012 versorgen. Aber auch eure Anekdoten wollen und sollen gehört werden. Schickt eure Erinnerung, eine Episode oder ein kleines Ereignis mit der letzten Linzer Meistermannschaft an unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. Das ist unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. Die besten Einsendungen werden dann in einem ganz besonderen Rahmen verlesen und gewürdigt. und unter allen Einsendungen werden insgesamt 10 Unibet Hockey O'Clock T-Shirts verlost. Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Back on the first episode of Flying High, the story of the Black Wings championship run in the season 2011-2012. Here with head coach Rob Daum, the architect of that team. And coach, one of the mantras of that year, and one thing that a lot of media people, myself included, always reverted back to was never lose two in a row. Was it indeed uttered by you, or was it just something that took on a life of itself and was made what it is up to this day by the media?
No, it was something that I focused on when talking to the media and when talking to the team. That was definitely something that I put forward and sort of lived by, that we wanted to be a consistently good team. And if you're going to do that, you don't lose two in a row. So that was really a strong focus that I felt was important for our team to have as a mantra and try and live up to that.
Now, I know it's been 10 years and you could be exactly right, or maybe a little farther off, because obviously memory does that to us. But would you be able to remember when the first time in regular season and where it unfolded that you lost indeed two games in a row?
No, I couldn't. And I can't. And you're right, memories do fade. But I can't remember when it was. I have no idea. I'm sure you know, but I don't. And my memory isn't the best at the best of times. But no, I can't remember when that occurred.
That's why we got the great statisticians over at Unibet, who, of course, dug a little deeper. And it indeed happened in January of that season. So you had gone four full months of the season until you had back-to-back losses. It happened on January 10th of 2012 and January 13th of 2012 in rounds 40 and 41 of a 44 game regular season at that end. And it happened both times after you had led in games. You led Graz 2-1 and lost. And the next round, you led Villach 1-0 and lost. Does that bring back some memories, or did those fade away, or did you try to compartmentalize those games as far away as possible?
Well, no, I don't remember those games particularly. But when you mention we didn't lose two games in a row until that time, that just sums up our whole season right there. That's just unbelievable. And I didn't know that. So when you bring that up, like I say, that just describes our season in a nutshell. That's absolutely, well, I can't even fathom how unbelievable that is. Now that you mentioned, it was an incredible year from start to finish, but that just sums it up right there.
And this is only part of a bigger trivia question. And this brings me to a competition where every listener of this podcast, where every fan can enter, because at the end of your championship year, a DVD was produced summing up this entire journey, a movie about the Black Wings season 2011-2012 with bonus content back with the old Eber rights holder. I might have had a hand in producing this DVD, and only 50 DVDs have been printed, 50 or 60 if I'm not mistaken, and I myself still got one. This DVD will be awarded to the user, to the listener who answers most of the trivia questions that I'm putting out on this podcast. And it's going to be one per episode up until the very end. He or she who's got the most correct answers will win this prize, obviously. The trivia question I'm alluding to has, of course, to do with the back-to-back losses. You didn't lose back-to-back games up until games 40 and 41 in that season. So the question is, how often did Linz lose two games in a row in the season 2011-2012? Would you take a wild guess at it?
Would I? I have no idea. I really don't.
It happened. But I know. It happened once. Might have been once, twice, three times, four times. Who knows? All the answers, please, to unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. I'm collecting all the right answers from all the users, and he or she who gets the most trivia questions right will get one of these DVDs. You own one yourself.
I do. And whenever.
It's something every Linz fans wants, hopefully.
Oh, it's an incredible production. And when you, and for a Linz fan, if you live through that season or you were at the games, you definitely should have it, because it's so well done. And you can feel, if you've been involved with it, you can feel the emotion in the video, and it brings back some incredible memories. I get emotional every time I look at it, and to be quite honest, I get emotional every time I talk about that season and about that team and the players that were involved throughout that that year. I can't describe how much I cherish in all of my coaching years, how much I cherish that year in Linz, and all the years in Linz, to be honest. But that year in particular, it was something that you're fortunate. I consider myself really fortunate to have experienced something that I don't even know what the right word is.
Which is why we'll move on a little bit. We've already talked about that incredible stretch of not having back-to-back losses in almost 4 months' time. The journey towards the playoffs went pretty smooth, but a couple of things that were interesting along the way that I would like to talk about. But first, I want to listen in to something another former player of yours on that team sent me. His first kind of observations as regards the new incoming head coach, Rob Daum, told by none other than Phil Lucas.
My first meeting with Coach Rob Daum, I'm not 100% sure, but he might still remember. I don't know if me and Rob talked in the off season prior to his arriving in Linz. I'm almost sure that we did, but if not, then my first meeting with Rob was literally, I got married this summer to my wife Faye, and he knew about it. So I'm assuming we really had that conversation over the summer months. And that was the first meeting as well, when he came up to me in the locker room. I said hello to every player, shook everybody's hand, and he said, how was the wedding? and I felt like that was a nice gesture, and I really didn't know what to say. I said, like, yeah, it was fun. It definitely was fun, but I didn't want to go into detail, obviously, as well. I just met Rob. And then after that, it was beginning of a journey. I thought, I think our relationship wasn't based so much on exchanging words and talking too much, but I feel like we had an understanding of what the other one needs from the other one, and we didn't have to talk too much. I understood what he needs out of me and what he needs from the team, and I think it was the other way around as well. So I really enjoyed working under Rob, and I learned a lot. I took a lot with me into my new position now, and like I said, looking back to 2011 and 12, what we achieved with that team had a lot to do with his actions as well.
Says the new head coach of the Black Wings, Linz. And I thought it'd be interesting to get Phil's perspective here on the pod, because obviously it's one of the more interesting developments and probably one of the harder decisions for this team on that year, or during that year, as he was the number one centerman before you came in, and he was the fourth line centerman after you came in. How did that demotion come about? And I'm deliberately calling it demotion, but knowing that there was a bigger purpose behind what you did.
Well, first of all, I did call Phil in the summer because I'm sure he was the first guy I called, to be honest, because I knew what he meant to the team there. And I knew that he was going to be a real key figure in us moving forward, because in talking to people, all they talked about was how important Phil was and how he was going to be a key part of the team. But it's interesting that you're right. Phil had a lesser role than, I got to be careful. It would appear he had a lesser role with the team when you say that he was a fourth line center, but his role was just as important, but it was just different. And I think that was, and for him to accept that role is a real tribute to his character and his putting the team first, because it would have been very easy for him with the stature he had within the team and within the community and everything to voice his displeasure with that, but he didn't. And what it allowed us to do is it gave us depth within our lineup. It allowed us to play four lines because against anybody, because Phil was such a good player that you could play, you never got a bad matchup. You never got a bad matchup because Phil was able to play against anybody in the league, and it allowed us to have balance throughout our lineup, which we wouldn't have had if Phil would have played higher up in the lineup. So that was how it evolved. And it goes back to the philosophy of building the team. And I mean, you can have a philosophy all you want, but if the players aren't willing to accept their roles, it's not going to work. And it's not easy for a player who has been in a more prominent role to accept a lesser role, at least what people see as a lesser role, like Phil did in that season. So I can't, that's a real testament to his character. And, he had such a huge part within the dressing room and not allowing that type of changing in his stature affect the good of the team. And, it's hard to explain how difficult that is for someone to do. And Phil did it for the good of the team. And, I can't say enough about how important that was for us throughout that season.
As with Pat Leahy, things could have gone south there pretty bad if Phil hadn't been his selfless self, obviously. In retrospect, how often did you think about this and what could have gone wrong here?
Oh, I didn't think about too much about what could have gone wrong. I think you appreciate the fact that it didn't. And you also realize, as you're suggesting with some of what we're talking about here, that it easily could have. But, we were fortunate that we had success early. And I think that was the key for us, is we had success early. And then when you have success, you create a belief. And when you have a belief, that's a pretty strong and powerful and difficult thing to destroy. And the belief just kept growing. And then because of that, we were able to accomplish the things that we did. But you're right. It could have easily been completely different. But, fortunately, it turned out the way it did.
Because you were able to tack on win after win after win, it seemed. And that's also something that's been proven by our Unibet stats from game day 11 onwards, you led the standings up until the very end of the season. And then an interesting development on the very last day of the season happened in Vienna that seemingly had nothing to do at first with your season, but then led to one of the bigger roadblocks to the championship. Vienna had to win, I think, with 6 or 7 goals in difference against Jesenice, and of course eked out an 11-3 victory. When you read or saw the results of that game day at that time, what did you think about it?
Well, I wouldn't say I was surprised, because at that time there were not too many things were surprising, and so when that happened, we just accepted it, I don't think you could expect it, because you don't expect that to happen, a team to win by 7 goals, but because of the circumstances, it was a possibility. And the fact that it did happen, it just meant that, we had to be prepared for what laid ahead, and just focus on what we, what we could control and what we had to take care of.
How do you look back on that 7 game, as it turned out, quarterfinal series against Vienna?
It was a tough series, and we knew it was going to be a tough series because Vienna had a good team. And I think there were a lot of people that expected we would fold in the playoffs because our season had been so miraculous. They didn't think that it would continue. In fact, when we went to the final, I talked to a friend of mine, or who's become a friend of mine, who was involved in the media heading into the final against Klagenfurt, and he said they would beat us in 5 games. So that was kind of the feeling people had going into the playoffs, that now was the time for us to really prove what we were, and what had happened up until then really wasn't anything yet, which was true. And the most difficult series to win a lot of times is the first one. And like I say, Vienna had a really good team, and I think they beat us in game 1, which obviously set the tempo of the series. They had Gratton, and he was one of the top players in the league. And I mean, they were really solid. And I think the biggest goal of our season that year was scored in overtime in game 2. Martin Grabermeier from Danny Oberkofer in overtime was gave us the win to even the series. And then it was a tough series from there on. But that goal was definitely the key goal in the season for us, because without that one, who knows what might have happened moving forward, being down 2-0 to Vienna.
2 more things I want to focus on in that series, because that one goal was kind of the catalyst to opening up the series. You eventually led 3-1, but you led Vienna back in the series. And I want to take you back to game 6 of that series, and one of the biggest phantom calls the league's ever seen. It's still called the phantom goal of Vienna, where Vienna scored, or Vienna hit the crossbar, and the refs ruled it as a goal. How did you experience that decision on the ice, and what went through your head once you saw the TV footage afterwards?
Well, I thought we were getting screwed, to be honest. Like, all the conspiracy theories that you can imagine start running through your head. And I remember the goal during the game, and we had, I think it was Danny Oberkofer in the penalty box. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. I don't remember a lot of goals in my career. I remember the goal that gave us the overtime win. And then I remember the goal in game 6, and we had the person in the penalty box saying it's no goal, because he was watching it on the video. And then they called it as a goal. And then Christian Pertaller comes down after the period, and he tells me it was no goal. And then I eventually see the video. Well, I was flabbergasted. I couldn't believe that a person could make that call based on the video evidence. So I was in a state of shock. And then, to this day, I can't I cannot understand why that call was made and how it was made, considering it was blatantly obvious that it wasn't a goal. So I don't know how to delve into it any more than that. I was in a state of shock.
So you're sitting on the bus, you know the series is tied at 6, you know it's coming down to an all-deciding 7th game. How are you and the team able to channel that anger into, let's call it extra motivation, because the way you dominated that game 7 might suggest that you were able to do so?
Well, that was one of the highlights of my coaching career, the way we were able to respond to the adversity and to stay focused and to not allow that incident to take away what had been such a wonderful season. And I think that, I guess the hockey gods repaid us in game 7. So it was a real tribute to our team. And I wasn't surprised by it, because we had such a good year and we were so strong mentally that we weren't going to be denied by that circumstance. And we put that behind us as quick as we could, and what is what you have to do in the playoffs. You have to not worry about what's happened in the past. All you have to worry about is what you can take care of at the moment. And we responded really well, obviously, in game 7.
Now, if it were a sports movie, the season the Black Wings had, I'd probably, if I'm a director, put a focus on a locker room speech right before that game 7. Do you remember what your message to your team was, or was it just the same message as always, go out and win?
Well, I think that when you get into game 7, there's enough pressure and there's enough understanding of what is needed that I don't know that you have to say too much. I can't remember what I said, but I know if I faced a similar situation, I would just say, you know, listen, we've played hard all year. We know what it takes to get the job done. This is a great opportunity for us to show everybody how strong and tough we are. And let's just go out and enjoy the opportunity we have here and leave it all on the ice. I don't know if that's what I said, but I know if I faced a similar situation now, I'd say something along those lines. I would just say, this is a great opportunity. This isn't pressure here. This is just a great opportunity. Let's just take advantage of the opportunity we have here tonight. We're playing at home. It's all or nothing. You couldn't ask for anything more than this as an athlete.
You're moving on to the semis 2 days later. It's Ljubljana who's your opponent. And I vividly remember talking to Bobby Lucas a couple of months ago about that series. And he said, we all knew that Ljubljana wouldn't be able to win 4 games against us. Did you share that sentiment?
No, I didn't. As a coach, you may think that, but you never believe that. We were a confident team, but in sports, you never know. I thought as long as you're playing a game, there's always a chance that they can, or your opponent can win. So you just have to take care of business. And once you've won the 4 games, then you can relax and enjoy your accomplishments. But until that happens, you can't take anything for granted.
Still looking at that series that eventually ended with 4 wins to 1 for Linz. Now looking back on it, was that series, or did the victories, the wins come a little bit too easy? And you know, there's a follow-up question attached to this.
Well, I think, first of all, I think if I'm not mistaken, because my memory sometimes eludes me, but I think they were playing Hungary and they beat Hungary, and I thought Hungary would have been a much more difficult game or team for us to play. So I thought we were fortunate that we were playing them in the semifinal and not the Hungarian team. So I was happy about that and looking forward to the series more so with them than Czechoslovakia. So, you know, I was happy that you know, we ended up playing them. It was probably an easier series than you would expect in a semifinal. So I think that's fair in saying that. So yeah, I would say it was easier than you would normally expect.
Now, as the league at that time had it, both semifinal series ended after 5 games, and there was a full week up until the first game of the finals. Was that an advantage, or was that something that you hated at that time?
No, I didn't. I hated it. We just wanted to keep playing. The longer you go in a season, the less time off you want. You just want to keep playing when you get to the playoffs. Just want to keep playing. And so that time off was not something that I thought was positive for, you know, for us. So I would have preferred to start the series right away, but, you know, obviously that didn't happen.
And then, of course, the start to the finals didn't go the way a lot of Black Wings fans at that time would have anticipated it. And it is something, and that's a follow-up question that I'd like to attach to the Ljubljana series, and a question that regarded this, and something that Bobby Lucas said as well. The series wasn't all too physical, and we easily won it, and that was the problem because Kati came to play and we didn't in that game number one.
No, I think that's a fair comment. I think that's an accurate assessment of what happened. You lose your playoff edge a little bit when it's easier than it should be, and I think that was definitely that's an astute observation by Bobby, and I think that is fair. You combine I hate to say easy, but not difficult series against in the semifinal, and then you have the week off, and the combination of those things were detrimental to us. No, there's no question about that.
You were down 1-0 in the quarterfinal series against Vienna. You were down 1-0 in the finals against Klagenfurt. Obviously, at a later stage a game is played, the more intense everything becomes. But because of the fact that you've been there before, did you ever lose your cool, or did that loss against Klagenfurt in game one of the finals keep you up at night?
Well, any losses in the playoffs keep a coach up at night, but I never lost confidence in our team. Not throughout that entire year did I ever feel that we weren't going to win. And I know that sounds really, I don't even know what the right word is, but I just,
confident, I guess I just had
so much confidence in our team and the way that we had played, and that I just didn't think that we were going to lose. I just didn't think that. And I've never felt that with any other team, but with that team that year, the way it had evolved and the way we had played, I didn't think that we were going to lose this series against Klagenfurt. And I remember Danny Ehrman talking to me after we had won game five and won the championship. And he said, boy, that was tough. And I just said, Danny, I there was no way we were going to lose. I didn't think there was any way we were going to lose. And it was just a feeling that I had with that team at that time. I've never had it since. And I can't explain it.
Now, as media people go, they're always trying to look for turning points within a game, within a season, within a series. Does it even make sense to look at turning points within the final series with you oozing of confidence?
Well, you would probably know the turning point better than I, because to be honest, I don't remember one in that series. Obviously, I remember the one against Vienna with the overtime goal. But I don't remember one in the Klagenfurt series, but I'm sure there was one. I just can't remember it.
Well, you'd really have to look long and hard. Probably the turning point would just be that game in Klagenfurt, where it appeared that you always kind of had an answer and kind of always were that step ahead of the opposition, and at some point, even to us broadcasters, it just appeared Vince is a team of destiny. You knew it, we knew it. And that was one of the rare instances where people were really able to see it.
You're right. And I can't explain it. And I've thought about it over the years, and I have no explanation. And I've been around this game a long time, and I've never experienced anything like it. And I just I can't come up with any reason why it was as it was, other than for myself, there was never any doubt in my mind that we were going to be successful and win. And again, I can't explain it, but I'm glad I had that feeling for once in my life, because it was something really, really special.
If hockey fans didn't follow the league, or at that point haven't followed the league back then, didn't follow it, and if you want to retell just how buzzing the rink in Linz was and how that buzz grew over those three playoff rounds, how would you do that?
I can't put it into words, Martin. It was, I just can't do it justice. I can't verbalize the emotions that were created and the electricity in that building and the support that the people in the building and the whole city of Linz gave us. I just don't know how to put it into words.
Because if one looks at the official numbers at that time, the attendance for a Linz game always set at 3,650 people. At what point did you think, come on, who are we kidding?
Well, all, especially in the final series, but all through the playoffs, once we hit the playoffs, I don't know how many people were in that building, but there were, you couldn't put a virus in there. It was just packed to the brim. And it was like that every night throughout the playoffs. It was really something special.
You're winning the title. It happens on home ice. It caps a tremendous season where almost everything went right. The final whistle, the final buzzer goes through the arena. What was your first emotion if you try to think back?
Well, when initially when Gregor Baumgartner shot the puck down the ice, I didn't realize the puck went in. I thought it was an icing. So I was pissed off because we didn't need that at that time. But, you know, but once we won the championship, it was a sense of relief, because it was, it's tough. It's really, really tough to go through the playoffs and all the emotion and all the stress and all of those things. It was, at that point, it was just a relief. And then as time passed a little bit, just a completely feeling of peace and satisfaction. It was knowing that you had accomplished something so special, and sharing it with so many people. The way the rink was, the way the people were engaged with the team, it was not just a victory for us in the dressing room. It was a victory for all the people in Linz, all the people that had come to our games. They shared in it. They were part of it. And because of that, it was a very, very satisfying feeling of accomplishment. I've got a picture of Punch Imlach with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it's a picture of him sitting alone, and he's got the Stanley Cup on his right. He's got a glass of champagne, and he's having a sip of champagne. And on the chalkboard, it says, "No practice tomorrow." And that sums up the feeling you have as a coach when you experience a championship and the feeling of satisfaction that you have realizing that you've accomplished something very, very special, and something that you'll share with your team and those people for the rest of your life. There's nothing in sport more gratifying, more rewarding than having the ability to win a championship, to pay the price you have to pay all year long, every day, and then to reach the pinnacle by winning in the end. All of your hard work and everything that you've done to reach that goal is substantiated at that moment. And there's no greater feeling in sport than that. And it's something that you don't ever forget. And the reason you stay in the game and you stay working is to experience that feeling again, because there's nothing better than that.
This could have perfectly rounded out our conversation, but I just want to try to dig deep one last time. If you look at the season in its entirety, is there one story, one event, one tiny little tidbit that stands out that you'll always remember, or is it just the sum of the parts that makes this all special?
No, it's just the sum. It's just the sum of that whole experience, the whole year. There's not one particular thing that sticks out, obviously, other than the gratification at the end. But there was nothing that I can put my finger on that would give that justice. From a personal standpoint, there was something that happened that was kind of neat for me. Is that after we'd beat Vienna in game seven, I went to the gym the next day, which is what I would normally do. And there were a few people in the gym, probably about 15 or 20. And when I came in, they all stopped their workout and had a round of applause, which was pretty gratifying.
There you go. There is something that you'll remember, that of course those people will remember, and that just shows that Linz in that year, well, it was always a hockey town, but probably became the hockey town among hockey towns.
Well, I think so. I think that if you look at what happened during that year, and then what happened, you know, in the subsequent years, I think they expanded the rink three times during the 6 years that I was there. So more people wanted to be a part of it. And that's pretty special as well, because when people are that interested, it's something that doesn't happen all the time.
Coach, I couldn't have asked for a better guest to open this Flying High series, a long look at the championship of 2011-2012 for the Black Wings in Linz. Quick reminder for all the listeners here, just go to the show notes and you'll find the time code of the trivia question if you want to take part in the giveaway of one exclusive DVD that was produced for that magic carpet ride. Next week, it's going to be Martin Glaber-Meyer's turn to tell the journey from his point of view. For this week, that's it, Coach. Thank you so much for taking such extensive time and talking so extensively about that magic carpet ride.
Well, Martin, thank you very much, because anytime I get a chance to relive those moments, it's really special. So thank you.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt. Unibet Hockey.